following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome everyone to our Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast. Alongside Tom Silverstein, I am Olivia Reiner. It has been many months, years, it almost feels like, since we last spoke in Spoon. I honestly forgot what you looked like, forgot what you sounded like, because we haven't sat down for a podcast. We have been communicating a lot about other things. However, we have not had the time to sit down and chat with all of you, our lovely listeners. So guess what? We've got to make up for some lost time today. We've got a lot to go over. Some staff changes that are very important to go over. We'll talk a little bit about Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur's press conferences from earlier this week, Aaron Rodgers' future in Green Bay, all of that good stuff. Plus, we've got a nice little treat at the end of the podcast, too, for all of you. I had about like 10 minutes to chat with AJ Dillon the other day, Packers, no longer rookie running back, technically. Well, actually, perhaps that's up for debate. We had a little discussion about that as well. So that will come at the end of the interview. But first, let's get down to the nitty-gritty, the news, and the meat of the conversation. We'll start off right away by talking about the fact that now former Packers defensive coordinator Mike Pettine is out with the team. Before we start talking about the candidates, Tom, I'll ask you, how much sense does it make for the Packers, or did it make for the Packers, to move on from Pettine at this point at the crossroads that they were at, having lost two NFC championship games now in these last 2 years?
Well, it made sense in the fact that I think that LaFleur lost some confidence in him. I thought the defense actually improved over the course of the 3 years that Pettine was in charge, and I thought they made an improvement last year to this year. But I think there were just some philosophical differences in how they viewed playing defense. And, you know, Pettine really wasn't LaFleur's guy when he got hired. Pettine was here. I don't think it's that he didn't think Pettine was, you know, a qualified guy. He did. And he was the best, probably the best choice to go with at that time. But he was not LaFleur's handpicked guy, not the guy that played whatever scheme it is that LaFleur considers his favorite. So, and I do think LaFleur favors a little different scheme. So I'm not surprised it happened. And it's now on LaFleur to pick the right guy. I always say, if you're going to fire someone, you better have someone in mind who can do a better job.
Last time we talked, Tom, so we haven't had done this podcast since the night of the NFC Championship game. And we briefly touched on Mike Pettine's future in Green Bay, but we looked at what Matt LaFleur had to say after the game about the defense and the defense's performance, and kind of considered that in relation to the fact, or the question, should the Packers move on from Mike Pettine? We looked at how Matt LaFleur talked about his decision to kick a field goal in the fourth quarter, the fact that he had trust in the defense to come up with a stop and to get the ball back to the offense in a short period of time. To get the Packers up over the Buccaneers. That obviously did not happen. However, his faith in the defense was there. And then we also talked about the coverage call at the end of the first half that ultimately wound up and led to a Buccaneers touchdown. We juxtaposed those two scenarios. It seemed like at the time in that press conference that Matt LaFleur had kind of let the blame fall on Mike Pettine, because it was our assumption that the coverage, that call was on Mike Pettine. But what was your sense in the days following of what exactly happened on that play?
Yeah, so in talking to sources familiar with the defensive staff and also with LaFleur, it's a bit of a he said, she said type of situation. But the bottom line is that ultimately LaFleur has the final say and he has to take responsibility for what happened there. So from one side, apparently Pettine, LaFleur said, you know, let's play this two-man, meaning two safeties back, and there were 8 seconds left in the half. Tampa Bay had no timeouts. They were looking to move the ball up a little further to try to get in field goal range. And so, according to this one source, actually two sources said this to me, that Pettine, let me step back here. Pettine heard that LaFleur call for man, to play man-to-man defense, because he thought they were going to run the ball. Two people told me that, and that LaFleur was under the assumption that Tampa still had a timeout so that they could run the ball, call timeout, and kick a field goal, you know, and they were right on the precipice of field goal range. So what happened, of course, was that they threw it over Kevin King's head with no time left, and that you can't allow happen. And that's what LaFleur said afterwards. You just can't do that. Well, it's, you know, from the other side, I heard that it was a miscommunication, that LaFleur actually called for two-man defense to be called, and Pettine thought he called, thought he heard him say man coverage, and called for a man coverage. Well, bottom line, whatever it is that Pettine called, when they're lining up, if LaFleur doesn't like what they're doing, he needs to call timeout and make sure that everything is square, that everybody's on the same page. And he just didn't do it. And it cost them dearly. It cost them a touchdown. And instead of a 7-point lead, it was 11-point lead at halftime. So it's a little complicated, but depending on who you believe, regardless, there was a mistake there. And I think LaFleur has to accept responsibility for not clearing it up.
Yes. And he did, for what it's worth, in this week. But that's, at this point, that's neither here nor there, because Pettine is gone. And now the Packers need to move forward and hire a new defensive coordinator. And Matt LaFleur, for the first time, will have an opportunity to do so, as Pettine was a holdover from the McCarthy era. So there's a long list of interview candidates. And some they were first reported by ESPN. There's a long list. Tom, you've been able to confirm some of them, plus some other not necessarily interview candidates, but some people of interest, I should say. On this list is Wisconsin defensive coordinator Jim Leonard, Browns defensive line coach Chris Kiffin, Saints defensive line coach and assistant head coach Ryan Nielsen, Eagles defensive line coach and run game coordinator Matt Burke, Packers defensive backs coach Jerry Gray, Chargers defensive passing game coordinator Joe Barry, Washington football team's defensive backs coach Chris Harris, Rams safeties coach Ejiro Evero, and then I suppose also on the list was Falcons senior assistant Bob Sutton. However, he's going to the Jaguars, I believe. And then Chris Richard was also someone that the Packers were interested in, Tom, but you reported that the Packers never, you know, arranged an interview in any way. He's now going to the Saints, so I suppose he's out of the picture as well. So based on that list, what does it appear that Matt LaFleur is looking for?
Well, to me, it sounds like he's spreading a very wide net. He's willing to talk to guys who haven't done it before, who haven't called plays before, and he's willing to talk to guys who have called plays before. He's looking at guys who play 3-4. He's looking at guys who play 4-3. He's really casting a wide net in just, it sounds like, to get a really good feel of what's out there and maybe helping him decide what it is that he wants specifically. Now, another person we forgot to mention was Jerry Gray, who the secondary coach for the Packers, who is interviewing as well, and I think remains a very strong candidate for the position. There's sort of a couple of things at play here. One, LaFleur is familiar with Joe Barry and Ejiro Evero, the defensive back safeties coach for the LA Rams. He coached with them when he was in LA. They both run the same system that the Rams ran this year under Brandon Staley when they had the number one defense in the NFL. It's also the same defense that Vic Fangio runs, formerly of the Bears, now with the head coach of the Denver Broncos. So it's a system that LaFleur is very familiar with, and I would guess has a preference to go that direction, but he's not limiting himself to that. Jerry Gray would be sort of a hybrid of those. He's got a little bit of Pettine in him, but he also is different. He plays more of a 4-3 front. Jim Leonard is sort of as close to Pettine as you could get. He worked under Pettine, played under Pettine. The thing that LaFleur would have to sell with that selection is, how is that different than having Mike Pettine? So it would be basically the same system. So I tend to think that, you know, Jerry Gray is right at the top of the list. I think Evero is probably at the top of the list. I think Joe Barry is probably at the top of the list. And then we'll see with some of these other guys who I don't think he's all that familiar with, but he wants to talk to them and see what their philosophies are.
If the Packers end up choosing Jerry Gray to become their next defensive coordinator, that means that they'll potentially be looking to fill a defensive backs position as well. I know we've talked this week, Tom, about Gray. Even if he doesn't get the defensive coordinator role, how likely is it that he'll stay with the Packers if he doesn't?
Well, that's a good question. Now, my assumption is he's under contract for another year and probably has an offer to stay another year under the current position in case he doesn't get the coordinator's job. So if they were to bring in Ejiro Evero, who's a defensive backs coach, now he would be the coordinator, but would Jerry Gray feel comfortable about coaching under that? There's not a lot of jobs left out there. There's not a lot of secondary jobs out there. So he may just have to suck it up for a year and do it if he doesn't get the job. They would have some trouble finding a secondary coach if Jerry Gray gets the job. All these guys they're interviewing are under contract. And so the only way they can move is if they get a promotion or the team lets them leave. And, you know, the Rams have lost. So if Jerry Gray gets it, the Rams have lost so many coaches. I don't know if Sean McVay would let Evero go. I don't know what the situation would be if, you know, if Jerry Gray got it, who would they be able to get as a secondary coach? I'm not sure. It might have to be someone in-house. Jim Leonard gets the job. You know, I don't know if Jerry Gray sticks around. There's just a lot of moving parts there that LaFleur has to consider.
How likely is it that the Packers make a hire this week? How soon should Packers fans expect to see this position filled?
Well, LaFleur is the kind of guy who he takes his time. He agonizes over decisions, from what most people say. You know, he's very thorough and tries to make the decision, make it very clear to himself that it's the right decision. So with that said, I would think that it would be next week, but it's possible he makes a decision. I don't think it would be announced. I think it could become, it could be reported this week if he does make it, but I know the NFL doesn't like to have teams announce things during Super Bowl week. So it might be not till next week till it was announced, but he could offer the job to someone this week. I think that's a possibility.
Now let's flip it over to the special teams coordinator discussion. So this is also not exactly new news. However, we can move it forward a little bit. The Packers parted ways with special teams coordinator Sean Menenga after the game on Sunday, and they will be moving on and promoting assistant special teams coordinator Maurice Drayton to that role. So the Packers special teams have been all sorts of unimpressive, and I think we've covered that pretty extensively on the podcast this year. You know, this season, the special teams group as a whole was ranked 29th in Rick Goslin's annual special teams units rankings. Last season, they were 26th overall, so they've gotten worse over the span of two seasons, and that's not necessarily all on Sean Menenga. The players have not exactly been a very explosive bunch, and they're going to have to figure out ways to retool that group. They'll be forced to do that, Brian Gutekunst and his staff, this offseason. However, looking at Drayton specifically, who's been coaching football now for 22 years and now has the shot at being a coordinator, how different can his approach and philosophy be, having formerly worked under not only Sean Menenga, but also Ron Zook before him?
Yeah, I think every guy has his own way of doing things. And the thing about Drayton is that those aren't the only two guys he's worked under. He worked in Indianapolis, you know, under an experienced special teams coach, the Chuck Pagano, the head coach, very involved in special teams. He coached at the Citadel for quite a while in special teams. I think he probably has his own thoughts on scheme, but often scheme isn't as important as getting your players to play to their strengths, to be in the best positions. I think if he were to take over, at least described to me that he's a guy who would cut down on the amount of things they do and focus on quality over quantity. I think anytime you give it to someone younger like that, you're going to see changes. And I think Drayton has a decent reputation around the league, that there's people who are interested. I think Philadelphia was interested in hiring him. So the Packers move pretty quickly, and you never know, but it is a new face from the standpoint that he's never been a coordinator. And so I'm interested to see where he goes from there.
The changes at defensive coordinator and special teams coordinator aren't the only changes that are going to be happening to this staff. So in addition to those changes, there's a couple departures. Senior analyst Butch Berry is going to the 49ers to become their assistant offensive line coach. And then offensive quality control coach Kevin Coger is leaving for the Chargers to become their tight ends coach. I believe with the Packers, Coger was mostly working with the tight ends group with Justin Outen in that room. So he'll be taking a promotion with the Chargers. Berry, I believe, has a background coaching the offensive line. However, I believe with the Packers, he was working on the defensive line as a senior analyst, if my memory serves me correctly. I believe LaFleur said that this year.
Yeah, I forgot. He's kind of a guy they hired during the off season. He was an offensive line coach at the University of Miami. And, I really, to this day, don't know what he's doing. So
I think he was up in the box. I honestly couldn't tell you what he looks like. I don't know if we really ever saw him around. Like he wasn't on the sideline for games. I don't recall him being out at practice. Not that we would, it's so hard to recognize everyone out at practice this season because everyone's wearing masks. So that's tough. But anyway, so they will be filling a few positions potentially in the off season. So something to keep an eye on moving forward. So that's the current state of the coaching staff. Is there anything else before we move on from coaching staff changes? Anything else we want to hit on before we move on to some other topics?
No, I think we've hit it all.
Cool. Let's move ahead then. And I suppose before moving ahead, we'll go to discussing Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst's season-ending press conferences this week. So I think the big thing that I guess maybe the coordinators were probably bigger, but also the discussion surrounding Aaron Rodgers and his future in Green Bay is always, it's always going to be the topic, or at least it's going to be the topic ever since last spring and the draft. We discussed on our podcast we discussed Aaron Rodgers' comments following the Packers' loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game. And we discussed the knee-jerk reaction on the internet and beyond, I suppose, about what Rodgers had to say about the beautiful mystery that is his future in Green Bay. And at the time, to both of us, I think it sounded like, I mean, I'm not going to go too crazy on this today, but I think at the time it sounded to us like someone who knew that, you know, his best shot at the Super Bowl in a very long time was just ripped away from him. And it's also someone who understands that the Packers drafted a quarterback in the first round of the draft last year. So I think you're balancing those things, as we said at the time, and it didn't sound like someone who was looking to get out of Green Bay. It's certainly no indication from the team that they're looking to move on from Rodgers this season or this upcoming season. Yep. So, and that was pretty much what was reiterated by Rodgers on, you know, in the days following that. He goes on Pat McAfee's show every Tuesday, at least he was during the season. And it sounded to me like he was reiterating that sentiment. And Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur also were like, yeah, he's our quarterback and he'll be our quarterback in the years to come. So regarding that, Tom, what is the next shoe that drops with all of this? Is there another shoe? Do the Packers need to restructure Rodgers' contract so he has more guaranteed money, considering the fact that he doesn't have any more guaranteed money left in his contract, to feel like he's not, you know, kind of just vulnerable, and the Packers can move on from him whenever they see fit?
Yeah, so I think we understand where the Packers stand on Aaron Rodgers. And really, even while Rodgers was making his statements after the game, we knew that the Packers' intention was never to get rid of him. I mean, they've known all along that that Jordan Love was a long-term prospect, that it was going to take several years. And that got pushed back because of COVID, because he didn't really have an off season on the field and barely saw any, real work in training camp. And during the season, he was a scout team guy. So I think we need to be realistic about it. He's not their quarterback this year. They would like to develop him and maybe get him into a backup position. And they can think about what they want to do with Tim Boyle. But we're a long way from even that. So, yeah, now the question is, really only contractually, what do they do? And based on the comments that Brian Gutekunst made, I think they're going to redo Rodgers' contract, and they're going to give him a bunch of upfront money, and that'll maybe add a couple of years to his contract to make it more salary cap friendly, and they'll push off some of that guaranteed money into the future so that when he does leave, then that money will come due. But here's the thing, once Jordan Love becomes the quarterback, he's going to be on his first contract, and it's cheap. So anytime they remove Aaron Rodgers from the roles, they'll gain salary cap room. So I guess I understand why they're thinking, okay, we'll use Aaron Rodgers' deal to help us fix the salary cap this year.
Is there anything else that we need to talk about from this situation, or is that it? Like, is there anything else that I'm missing here that is important to go over?
Maybe I'm see no evil, hear no evil, but I just don't see anything into it anymore. I really think Rodgers is back. He's a starting quarterback. There's no question about it. The deal will be taken care of. Now, whether it's up to his satisfaction, that I don't know. That's the part where he holds a little bit of leverage. They need the cap room. He can say, well, look, I want guaranteed money enough that covers 2 years of salary. So whether they're willing to do that, I don't know. But either way, I believe that he's a quarterback. Let's see what happens. You know, ask me again in March, third week in March, and we'll know a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll continue to have conversations about the cap in the coming weeks, and we'll also start to get into free agency a little bit. But I guess I kind of let's transition over now into this conversation I had with AJ Dillon, which is pretty brief. Just about looking back onto his season, his experience on COVID-19 reserve for 5 weeks, and then also talking about the uncertain future of the running backs room. So without further ado, AJ Dillon. I'm joined now by what I want to call rookie running back AJ Dillon, although I don't think you're technically a rookie anymore. How would you describe yourself now?
Somewhere in the middle. The vets joked right before I left, and they said I'm not a rookie until my third game next year. So I'm not a vet until my third game next year. So technically, I guess I'm still a rookie.
Okay, so I won't call you second year running back AJ Dillon. I'll still stick with the rookie running back AJ Dillon. Although if you had the opportunity to tell AJ from a year ago how to navigate a rookie NFL season in the middle of a pandemic, what advice would you give him?
Just stay focused, you know, and don't let all the outside noise get to you. You know, just take it one day at a time and, you know, continue to show everybody exactly why you're there and what you're capable of.
You spent 5 weeks this season on COVID-19 reserve. And I remember shortly after you came off, you tweeted about how COVID hits everyone differently, that you would be the poster boy for it's no joke. What was the timeline of your recovery from the plight with the virus?
Yeah. So pretty much all the way until I got back. I tried to get back as soon as they allowed me to, you know, participate again. But no, COVID, I had like really severe symptoms. Kind of some things that, you know, came from that medically. And so I really was down and out for the count. But, you know, everything got all clear, and it was hard to get back in shape and everything after being out for like a month or so. But, you know, I was happy to where I got, and the medical staff did a great job making sure I was safe and did everything the right way.
Yeah, how challenging was it to deal with the virus and then also the recovery process while at the same time staying plugged into what was going on with the team?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I've been blessed, knock on wood, to have never had any like serious injuries, never really been sick besides a cold. So for me to hear stuff like that and to hear like I could potentially be out for the season or more with complications was wild, and took me back for a second. First couple of days, I'm not gonna lie, like closed on my blinds, didn't talk to anybody. But you know, I had a credible support from my teammates, my family, my friends, and all the Packers fans too. People were sending me, you know, get well soon things and stuff like that. So definitely a credit to them. But like I said, what I would have told myself from a year ago, just stay focused and, you know, let everything handle itself.
Something that you said after the Titans game, which was your best game of the season by far, 2 touchdowns, 124 yards on the ground. While you were on COVID-19 reserve, you had the opportunity to spend a little bit more time observing Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams and seeing what they do on a daily basis. What is your outlook on the 2021 season and what could potentially be a very different running backs room, given the fact that Aaron and Jamal become free agents in just about a month?
You know, I feel like the biggest takeaway from being around and behind them would just be how they, you know, how they show up every day. You know, I'm not going to lie. There's not going to be, every single day is not going to be amazing. You're not going to wake up and be like, oh, I cannot wait to go to practice. It's definitely not the case, I feel like, for most people anyway. But even on the bad days or the slow days, how they approached it, you know, being in their fourth year, that was something that I, you know, being a rookie, like really, you know, respected. And so I would just say professionalism and how to treat, take care of your body and practice and study film. That's definitely a big takeaway I took from them. And so, yeah.
How unusual is it to think about the future potentially without them? If they aren't able to come back.
Yeah. You know, that's the reality of this business. Like, you know, it is what it is, but you know, those are my guys for sure. And they helped me out a lot. You know, I got nothing but love for Jamal and Aaron, you know, and the other guys in that running back room. And I feel like they've, you know, they taught me a lot, but I've always prepared and I've always, you know, envisioned myself as RB1, you know, every time I take the field, I'm ready to be in that role because you never know what's going to happen. So if they're both back, if one's back, if none are back, and if I'm there, I'm ready to, you know, do whatever when my number is called.
So now that you're out of college, you've been playing in the league for a year, you don't have, as a student athlete, you're not able to work with brands, but now you're able to get involved. And among the brands that you're working with is Panini. How have you been able to promote their brand and their products during the pandemic when in-person events aren't happening?
Yeah, well, definitely for one, through trading cards, you know, having a chance, you know, be on trading cards is amazing. And then, you know, sometimes sign them and fans get those. And, you know, to just kind of see, obviously people are away from sports. People aren't at games right now for the most part. People aren't having in-person autograph signings really. And so to know that like there's still fans of me and, you know, other guys out there that, you know, are lined up and ready to go get their favorite player's card is awesome. And you see that support and, you know, for me to be able to give that to people is awesome.
So when you're not playing football, you are also a dog dad now. Boston Dillon is an Australian shepherd, and he is very adorable. How challenging has it been to train him and to also simultaneously keep him away from your trading cards at home and from tearing those up and getting into them?
Yeah, well, yeah, so I'm very stubborn. I always have to, you know, learn the hard way. And so getting a puppy my first couple months in the NFL – and being in an apartment building, probably not the, you know, best timing, best thing, but, you know, you grow into it and, you know, I love them. And so it's been fun. It's been a good ride. And, you know, I always got somebody there to hang out with.
Awesome. AJ, sweet. Thank you so much for chatting with me and for taking the time. Hopefully next time we get to talk, it's not through a computer, but who knows, it probably will be. But have a great off season. Stay healthy and stay safe, and hopefully talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time.
All right, everyone. It's Tom and I. We're back. That is going to do it for us today, everyone. Before we sign off here, Tom, is there anything else we wanted to tell the people?
Have a good week. Enjoy the Super Bowl if you are into that. And stay tuned, because in the coming weeks, there's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about.
Free agency, draft, so much. It's like truly the start of another season. Like it ends really abruptly, but there's like enough stuff going on. I feel like that it really feels like we're starting up. There's going to be so much going on.
Yeah, the new season starts the day after the old one ends. So
that is how that works.
Yep. And it starts fast and furious. It always does. There's no time in
between. Fun. Can't wait. Yes. We'll be back and we'll chat with you guys very, very soon. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com for all of your Packers coverage, JS Online, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We will be back in your feed hopefully soon. And we will talk to you then.